Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. On episode 231 of Yes But Why, our featured interview is with actress and podcaster Michelle Simone Miller. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. This episode of Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. You can get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. I'm about halfway through Jenny Slate's Little Weirds on Audible, and it could not be more adorable. If you like Jenny Slate and you like poetry, check out her book, Little Weirds, that she reads herself on Audible. It's great. Audible is available for your iPhone, Android, or Kindle. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. This episode of Yes But Why is also sponsored by PodcastCadet.com. Podcast Cadet is dedicated to helping you build your podcast. We will connect you to the resources you'll need to get better and better with each and every episode. Swing on by PodcastCadet.com to get help for all your podcasting needs. Let us know you heard about us from Yes But Why, and you'll get 20% off the workshop or service you buy. This week on Yes But Why, I talk to Michelle Simone Miller, actress, model, and podcaster from New York City. In our chat, we talk about finding a mentor, writing a book, and focusing on your strengths to navigate your path. Support Michelle Simone Miller by listening to her podcast, Mentors on the Mic. If you like this podcast, you'll like hers too. It's very similar. More helpful advice for entertainers. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 231, Michelle Simone Miller and the confidence it takes to follow your own path. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
So I remember, like, I was by a piano in the auditorium of my elementary school. I must have been around, I guess, six or seven. And we always had a drama class, and I always loved doing that. And at some point in time, I joined the drama club, and we did a show every year. I joined choir. And I don't remember how it happened, but all of a sudden, I remember having this realization at that young age, oh, you can do this for a career? Like, there was just that moment where, like, it hit me at such a deep level, and I was like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. Like, I just really felt that strongly where I was like, oh, I'm going to be an actor, of course. Like, this is what it is. And, you know, so young, and I remember, like, you know, I think I might have even promised my drama teacher in elementary school that I would win an Oscar and thank her. And she was like, oh, okay. And everyone kind of always thought that I would grow out of it hoped that I would grow out of it. Because, you know, you're just so young to have that type of thought, but it was so deep. It was like a visceral, physiological, like came from somewhere inside where I was like, oh, I could do this as a career. I'm doing this. I'm that. So that was the moment.
You said people were trying to talk you out of it. So actor, not the ideal job for your parents and family?
Oh, no. I mean, my mother always knew, I mean, obviously since a young age that I wanted to be an actor, but she would have, I mean, still want me to probably do something else. Supportive in the sense that, like, okay, this is what you want to do and you're great at it and I love you and I support you and I think you can do it. But also, like, this is a hard job. Like, it can be very hard and it's, you know, it can have its moments and there's lots of downs. And she'll say, like, you chose a hard path. And so there's this like twofold thing where on one hand you love it so much, and especially when things are good, but also like so many downs. So, you know, supporters when you said, but I also had like other people. I remember my mother and I, if we ever met someone famous or in the industry, I'd always want them to help me. Like I'd always be like, so like, you know, can you give me advice? Like, can you give me connections? What can we do? Like I want to gain access. And everyone's response was always, don't do it. Don't be an actor. Don't go. You know, I remember My mom met Sandra Bernhardt, who's like an actress, comedian, obviously, for people who don't know her, but she's great. Definitely look her up. And, you know, we met her casually. My mom met her and she said, listen, my daughter's an actress. She's done so many of these things. She does this. Like, she's wanted to be an actress since she was a kid. What advice could you give to her? Can you introduce her to someone? And Sandra was like, don't do it. Like, if she could do anything else, tell her to do that. And it was always really sad too, you know, for two reasons. One, I was like, she's done it before. Like, she can't just say that. Like, in my head, I was like, she knows how it feels to be on bigger sets and to act and feel that rush. And so, like, it's not fair that she can say for me to do something else when I haven't experienced that the way she has. I want to experience more of those opportunities. But also, I guess, you know, I totally understand in retrospect now, because she knows this is so hard and it's not, you know, always coming from a place of power as an actor. You don't have agency. You don't have control over a lot of those decisions as to whether you work or not. And so I think I understand now what she and a lot of other people used to say, which is, if you can do something else, sometimes you should, because, you know, there's so many things that are not great about it, but, you know, I have to hold on obviously to the things I love about it. So, which are a lot. So, or else I wouldn't be doing it. But yeah.
I feel like there should be like a, yes, I respect what you're trying to say, but follow-up question, if you do want to do this for the rest
right.
of your life, what's next?
Exactly.
What's that next
if
piece
you're,
of advice
if you're
you have?
That person, yeah, exactly. So like, got
great,
it.
Great.
Now moving forward, if I still want to do it, what can
yeah.
you tell me? Like,
it's like, you know that everyone that does something dangerous had somebody have to train them how to do that correctly, right? So, like,
right.
I'm sure when they walked up and were like, hey, guys, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to deal with explosives regularly by my face. Can I do that? And they're like, if there's anything else in life you'd like to do, kid, you should do that. And they're like,
exactly.
Nope. How about instead you teach me how to do it? Great, let's teach them. Like, come on.
Right. Well, I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, I wanted to make a podcast called Mentors on the Mic, because I always wanted mentors. Like, I always wanted people to help me and I always wanted guidance. It didn't have to be like, oh, you know, I'm gonna introduce you to someone. It was always just like, well, tell me about your journey. Tell me about what you did, you know, so I could at least learn from it. And I didn't really know how to get one. Like, I just wasn't someone who knew right away, like, how to keep a mentor. Like, you can meet someone really cool and maybe even get along, but like, how do you stay in touch with them? How do they become your mentor over time? How do you lean on them for advice? How do you ask them questions about the industry? And I think
totally.
That because I had to learn all of those answers, I was like, oh, well, I think I can make a podcast and showcase these mentors and help people maybe. And also help me, because I'm still learning from these people, obviously. So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're right, though. It's hard to find mentors, especially as you get older and further along, you know, like when you're first in like college or whatever, like just starting out. Yeah, there's plenty of people who are like, let me help you out, right? But as you get older, like, I'd like to learn some new things. And sometimes I will approach people who are younger than me, who are just happen to be well schooled in a specific thing that I'm interested in, you know, and they're like, oh, I don't know, you know, if I can help you. It's like, you really can, though. Like, it's so it is hard to connect in that way. And then the other thing is that, I mean, I've had some experiences where the people who were my mentors, you know, things happen and you find out that maybe they weren't working with everybody's best interests in mind. And then you're this person who you've like held in high regard for so long and who you listened to and created, you know, a lot of what you're doing around turns out to be a jerk, and you're like, oh.
I've had that happen too.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that happens a lot, unfortunately,
yeah.
You know, and so it can make it also hard to trust people enough to find a mentor, which again is why
right.
I think your podcast is great. And also what I'm trying to put out there too, this idea of like, you don't have to be in an unsafe scenario to learn from people's experiences.
Sure. Yes, I agree.
Like, and even if we find out, because legit, the person in my life who turned out to be a bad apple was interviewed on the podcast, and I just removed the interview. I was like, no, this is no longer available, because it was like, no, I'm not, this is no longer acceptable. So I don't
Interesting.
know. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It can be tough.
It's
I'm glad that you're
hard.
doing what you're doing. I find it very interesting that you had multiple experiences with these people telling you not to do it. And
Oh,
also, I'm
yeah.
like extra proud of you for like still doing it despite this like
Thanks.
constant pushback, which I
Yeah.
guess is part of the whole thing too. It's
Yeah.
like you are going to get rejected, so might as well have these weird actors reject your ideas. I don't know.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh man. I mean, bless your mother's heart for like asking people questions on your behalf as well,
Yeah,
though.
right?
I
Yeah.
mean, especially when she herself was like, "Yeah, I don't know," but she was like, "All right, listen, tell me what you got to say."
I guess
But
her thought was like, if you're going to do it, I might as well try to increase your chances as much as possible. And it helped. Like, there were a couple, my earliest manager was through her. So, like, my mom asked a friend of hers who was a modeling agent. Like, she owns this agency specifically for like high fashion models. And so, nothing I would do, but, or could do. But she asked this woman, do you know anyone that could help Michelle? And she was like, oh, well, I know this manager who sometimes asks us for models for auditions that she has. She'll be like, oh, I see this audition, it has models. Do you have any app models that are also actors? I'll submit your models. And so she put a meeting together. She arranged a meeting with this manager, and that's how I got my first manager. So my mother, man, she kept asking it, anyone she knew for any sort of connection or help.
wow. That's like a deep mom lesson that I'm personally
I
learning from
know.
that. Like
Yeah.
just this
So
idea that it's
nice.
like, hey man, who cares what you want? This kid wants it. You're gonna help.
Exactly. Yeah.
Man, so interesting. May I ask what your mom did for a living?
She's a mortgage banker.
Oh, yep.
So, yeah, totally different.
Yeah. Well, also like, mortgage. That's some real life tough stuff. I'm sure she has to talk to a lot of people about some rough things where it's like, yeah,
Exactly.
no, there's not money available for you at all. So
Exactly.
that's tough skin city. Wow, she's
Exactly.
great.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
awesome. So tell me about your first manager experience. Like, what happened with that? What kind of work did you do?
Yeah, so I got this manager sometime while I was in college, still maybe towards the end. So I didn't really get to go on many auditions with her. And then even when I graduated, I felt like the auditions were few and far between. She really focuses on a commercial. She did send me on some film and TV over the course of, working together. But she really worked with non-union projects a lot. Like I said, some union projects for sure. But, just really, really connected with non-union commercial type stuff. And so I'd go on auditions for print and for commercials, for non-union commercials, and or sometimes union commercials. And, they were few and far between at first. Like for the first 2 years, I felt like I would get these auditions, every once in a while, sometimes once a month, sometimes a couple times a month, once every 6 weeks. And I felt frustrated because I really wanted more. But also just, there were really great learning grounds for me to learn about how to audition, what's the process like. I can now explain all those type of things, audition process in my sleep as to, what a typical commercial or print audition is like. The amount of times I've had to hold a board that says like 600, number 638, you know what I mean? That teaches you a lot. It helps, but I used to get frustrated and be like, I'm not going to get these. Like the chances of me getting something where I'm 674 is very rare. It happens, but it's really rare. I mean, my chances are only so high. So, well, that's how I looked at it anyway. I don't know if that's negative, but that's how I felt. And so that slowly evolved into, I guess, her knowing more about me, but also booking some stuff. So like I think I'm trying to remember the first thing I booked with her. I can't remember, but like the small projects, like I booked industrials with her at first, maybe. So like I booked a US Army industrial. I was on a couple like training videos for the US Army. And I was in a David's Bridal industrial where, anyone who works at David's Bridal might be trained with a video that I was on where I played a bride. And then, I was in like a Bud Light in, you know, like, I think it was an industrial too, maybe. So like I did those type of things and like print ads, like things that like I really wanted to be in film and TV, but like was so happy at least I could be on set for something. And so I really very much appreciated that, like learning those stomping grounds and learning all the knowledge that comes with auditioning. And I think that really helped that when I did get the bigger auditions, I kind of had an idea of what to do and how to do it, kind of thing.
Yeah. So did you just jump right into, you know, trying to be full-time actor right out of college? Or were you like, you know, working a day job and then just doing auditions every once in a while? How did it pick up for you? 'Cause you have you've done a lot of things.
Thanks. Yeah, well, I think so because I wanted to be an actor since I was 6 or 7, I gave my mom plenty of notice, and I went to a very right. I went to a competitive high school in New York City that's like you have to take a test to get in. So lots of smart people. And while I was there, I was talking to my mom, and my mom's like, "You have to go to college. Like, there's just no ifs or buts. There was no like, oh, maybe we could talk about it." She's like, "You have to go to college," and she's like, "It can't be an acting program." She's like, "It can't be acting. Oh. You have to get an actual degree to fall back on if needed." And I loved school. So like, I was a really good student. I loved school. So I was like, okay, I'll go to a school that's very strong in theater and acting as well as liberal arts, you know? So I went to Brandeis, which is a really great school. I loved it.
Oh.
And when I graduated Brandeis, I was like, okay, mom, I held up my end of the deal. Like, I was like, I got a degree. I have that degree. I did well. I graduated with honors. I am now going to start my professional career. So I went at it full force. Now, I was lucky. I lived in New York. I didn't want to move to LA. So I lived in New York and I stayed at my mom's for a while. So I didn't have to worry about major New York expenses like rent and food and laundry. So that really helped me. So I'm super privileged that way. I like to tell people right off the bat. That being said, I still would have to get money for my other expenses, like anything that came with like, you know, $112 Metro card every month, you know, like things
yeah.
like that, they're expensive. So I had to work like side jobs, but it was always in service for my career. It was always like, okay, I'm making this money so I could live here, pursue my career and get headshots, you know, or get pay for this act, pay for my actor's access, you know, subscription or my backstage subscription. So, you know, there's so many expenses that come along with being an actor. It's nice to have, you know, money for it. So I would always do these like different types of part-time jobs. And
like temp jobs or like, you know, like
so not temp jobs. I mean, I've done a lot of different types of jobs. So right off the bat, I'm trying to remember. So I was like, one of my first jobs that I would do is I was a promotional model. So I would go to like festivals and events and bars and restaurants, and I would promote for an alcohol brand usually. Although I've actually done one, I did a couple for Victoria's Secret and I did a couple for like vitamins. So it wasn't always alcohol, but primarily alcohol.
Wow.
And I would give out free swag and I would give out free drinks. So I wouldn't make the drinks, but the bartender would make the drinks and then I would pass them out. And it was just kind of like a pretty face who would like pass around swag or pass around alcohol. So, you know, it was a pretty easy job. And it made like $25 an hour. So it was a nice sort of job that I could do on the evenings while like during the day I would take classes and try and go on auditions and stuff like that.
Oh, so you were taking like acting classes and stuff?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, I kept taking acting classes and also like I was hitting the ground running, but I don't feel like school teaches you or prepares you for the business side very much, which is one of the reasons why I'm writing a book about it. I'm writing a book about all the things I wish I learned when I left school.
Oh.
So it just, it covers everything that you kind of have to learn over time. So like what makes a good headshot, you know, what should your marketing materials be like? How do you do your own reel? How do you, like, what's the first couple websites you should try? What kind of things you should look out to for like with scams? I would just do all these, like, there's just so many things that come up with, like, trying to be an actor and learn as to, like I would talk to, like, everybody I knew about, okay, how do you get an agent? How do you do this? How do you introduce yourself to casting directors? How do you get the big auditions? That was something I would always ask people. I don't understand, like, I'm looking on these websites, I only see short films and low budget films, I see some commercials. I don't see the TV shows that I want to be on. And they'll be like, oh, you need an agent for that. I'm like, but how do you get an agent? They're like, well, you need to have like enough on your resume. You need like TV credits. A lot of agents want your TV. You know, I'm like, but how do I get those TV credits without an agent? So I was like, what? This is a catch 22. And they'd be like, yeah, that's your first catch 22 of this business, Michelle. So you kind of just have to, like, it was a lot of just learning as I went and talking and figuring things out and reading books and just trying to absorb all those answers.
You know, can I just tell you that over the course of all the interviews that I've done on this podcast, I've learned a lot from a lot of different people that went to like highly prestigious schools about what they're not teaching them. You know what I mean? Like, there is a lot of highfalutin Shakespeare productions going on where it's like, yeah, super great. But like, could you toss in like how Willie Shakes got him in the door? Like maybe a lesson, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's any level of the business part, because I feel exactly the same. Like I produced so many plays and created shows at my college that just had audiences. I never knew what it was to make a show or get human beings in a door or get a space that wasn't just handed to me, right? When I got out of college, it was like, okay, let's do a play. And I'm like, great, where? And then somebody was like, don't we have to get the rights? And it was like so much stuff that we like didn't even know about because nobody told us that part.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's interesting you say that because I always felt the same way. Like I feel like most undergraduate programs that teach acting, they are not, in my head, teaching you how to be an actor out in the real world. They're teaching you how to act almost like as if it's a hobby, even if it's a degree. I think they just kind of are like, we're going to teach you how to act. We're going to look at your monologues. We're going to have you perform them. We're going to have a show. We're going to put, you know, have you put together the show. We're going to put together the vagina monologue, whatever it is. They're putting all this stuff up. But I don't think they have the idea or the understanding or the insight to want to help or can help on how to leave and feel confident that you're ready to start. I think they feel like, oh, well, we taught you how to act. Like that should be enough. Like if you know how to act, then eventually people will find you. And I'm like, no, that's actually not true at all.
But may I say, and I hope I don't get, you know, like under fire for saying this, but I think there's two different kinds of like theater, as it were. There's academic theater and then there's the real world theater, right? Mm. Like how you actually get it done. And the unfortunate part is a lot of times the people who are working in the university setting maybe have never done the other part. Now, personally, I know that thankfully the college that I went to, the people who have, because my teacher was older and is not the guy in charge anymore, but I know the people who are, and I'm like pleased to know that they lived in the world and did plays and tried and created stuff and know how to build it from the ground up. So when they teach their students, they're going to mention that to them, right? I know the technical director and the guy who runs the program at the college that I went to. And I feel like the students now are getting this full education. Whereas sometimes the teachers that I had were talking about it in this ethereal, like, what if fashion, where it was like, what do you mean, what if? Like, how does a person get a play on a stage? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just wanted to know how to do it. And I had to do it years later. You know what I mean? Years later in my career, when I was working at another theater, and I was like, I have 2 weeks off. Can I put up a play in that random room no one uses? And they're like, yes. And I was like, great.
You know what's so funny is that I feel the same way as you do, like completely. I mean, I'm writing a book about literally this. And yet one of my mentors, it should be coming out by the time this episode comes out, so episode 9, right? So is a Tony nominated director, Kristen Hanke from Rock of Ages. She developed and directed Rock of Ages. She's also directed film and TV. And she, you know, I was interviewing her and she said, which was the first time anyone said this really, because everyone else I feel like agrees with you and I, But she said, you know, she was talking about directing, you know, from a young age, and then high school, she got to college, and she got a master's at USC. And she was like, yeah, so I started directing and I did this, and then I started, you know, I was directing my own work, and I was directing other people's work. And she kind of explained a little bit about the resources, like getting the set, kind of like what you said, and getting the costumes and how to make it work when you have like no budget. And as she's going, she was like, oh yeah, and then I started doing this, then I got to this big show, and I was like, oh, wait, slow down. When you left college, what did you do? Like, how, like, that's always, I'm like, what is your first role in the industry? It's always like one of my first questions. And she was like, well, I'm kind of just always this, I'm always a believer of this adage that, like, if, you know, if you do it, ugh, I'm so butchering this. But like, if you do it, then the, like, it'll come, like your capacity to, you know, grow will, like, it'll, oh God, I'm totally butchering this. But basically she said that, like because she kept doing it, more opportunities came to her. So really, when she left college, she said she was a waitress too, but she would use that waitressing money to put on shows, and she would just keep doing it and keep doing it and fill her time with doing shows and doing shows and doing shows. And finally, the shows just got bigger and bigger and bigger until, like, right, you know, very soon after, like I think she was 23 when her first big show hit in LA, and then it came to New York. And then a few years later, she did Rock of Ages. Like she was nominated for a Tony at 31. So all very young stuff. And she said that, you know, there's obviously ups and downs during that whole time frame. But it was the first time I heard, wow, like she really was able to do it. Like she didn't have a job she was trying to do to become the director that she is. She just kept directing and it worked. But I always felt like I would do that with acting and it didn't work. You know, like I took on almost anything I was cast in, unless I thought it was very scammy or weird. And I was acting all the time, and I was trying to like book student films and low budget films. Maybe it's different because as a director, you're creating something, so it's a bit different than I guess if you're acting and you really are waiting for someone to give you a role, as opposed to just making a role for yourself. But I just wasn't taught to do that. Like no matter what type of shows you create for yourself in school, I really didn't know how to make that work for yourself outside of school, and school doesn't have those, you know, you're not getting the given those resources in school.
Yeah, there's that
So,
too. There's that whole
yeah.
part. That's the other thing that I was just thinking of, because you mentioned, you know, the woman Kristen mentioned doing it, doing it, doing it. I've always felt that way as well. People aren't
Yeah.
casting me in roles, right? I would never get a job as a promotional model, right? I am not a pretty face that people are like, oh yeah, what's up? I have certain roles. I do those things. The only great roles that I have are the ones I made myself, the ones that I created to do myself, because I wanted to. Nobody was asking me to do it. So I had to create these things. That's actually why I got into improv and sketch, because it was like a doorway into figuring out how to do it on your own, as opposed to having a play being written and you getting cast in that thing. So I don't know. I mean, I'm down for the idea that you're right, that most schools don't teach you know, the business side of it. But I
For
guess I sort
sure.
of also agree with your guest that says that, like, just getting it done and like putting your just doing it, doing it, doing it is going to make you better at it just out of rote.
Yeah, I agree. I think that especially with her, like, well, you know, she really just kept going, and even during the lows, or even when, like, you know, the show didn't do as well as you'd want it to, she just kept doing it until, like, you know, the opportunities came to her. And I think that's just super inspiring, and different from what I did, because although I really, you know, hit the ground running in my own way, you know, there's something different about creating your own opportunities for yourself, which I really didn't do when I left school. So
It's hard though. A
something to
lot of
come.
times people aren't good at that. That's like just not their skill, right?
Yeah.
Like even in the improv community, we're always talking about this idea that like there's a bunch of us where it's like, yeah, I want to do a show about this. So when instead of waiting for it, I just call everyone I know and says like, hey, can I put up a show at your theater that's this? Hey, can I do this at your place? Like I just make it happen, right? Because I'm like, oh, I want to do this, so I'm going to do it. Whereas a lot of people will go to auditions for stuff and then they don't get it. And then they're like, well, I guess I have to do nothing. You're like, no, you can do other stuff. You didn't get into that
It's so
show, but there's
true.
other stuff to do. Because, I mean, in Austin, there's a lot of theaters. There's like six improv theaters and then like 10 theaters where, you know, they're putting up plays and writing plays and stuff like that. Like, there's a ton of opportunity. So whenever I hear about a person who's like, oh, well, I guess I didn't get this show, so I should do nothing now. I'm like, you know how many other things are going on? Do you know how many
No.
like street corners would love you to be doing a song and dance number for you for them right now? Like, seriously, like there's so much opportunity to be had if you like believe in yourself, but I feel like they don't set us up to believe in ourselves. I feel like, especially just to even harken back to these people when you were younger telling you not to do it, I feel like that vibe is all over the place when it comes to theater. I feel like there's this whole like, beware as you continue this terrible path. Like, ugh, come on, man. You know, like even my friends now, there are people who are real negative. The world's kind of a little harder. Not easy to continue to be an actor or an improviser or whatnot. And a lot of people are like, guys, I'm out. I'm just going to do something else now and probably not going to perform anymore. And it's like, it hurts me. It hurts my heart. I get it. I support them. Whatever their journey is, I support you. But it's like, guys, we can do this. This is going to be okay. You know? So let's talk about your, so you talked about the book that you want to write. Is that something that you're working on right now in tandem with your podcast?
Yes. So I've pretty much finished the book. I am still sort of editing it towards the end of the editing process and like putting, making things into chapters and stuff, which I didn't do when I was writing it. And then I don't know, I have to figure out the next steps after that.
Oh yeah. That's a whole nother world, publishing and whatnot, to figure out what goes on in that. You know, reflecting on, you know, sort of what you've shared with me thus far, I love the idea that your personal journey has a lot to do with finding and talking to these different people and having their and learning from their different experiences. And your learning process has a lot to do with talking to people and finding out what the way they look at it and empathizing. And I think that idea of empathy, from an actor perspective is such a like open door to receiving the information that people want to share with you. So it's fascinating to see how you're processing your own career in the way that it's like you're getting better and better with each new person that you talk to because you're just soaking it in. As a means to make yourself and everyone around you better. I think that's really cool.
Thank you. That's such a nice way of putting it. I agree. I hope.
So tell me, after you get going with potentially, it would sound like a different manager, after your part-time side hustles, when do you start getting into TV and film? How does that work for you? How does it feel for you?
It's crazy because, like I said, the ups and downs, there's so many. So I got an agent. I'd been trying to get an agent for so long. Like I just went to all these workshops and tried out for these agents and submitted to these agents and sent my headshot and resume to people. Just all the things I was told to do after talking to people forever about it. I also tried to connect with people who had gone to my college and tried to connect with people who were agents or new agents or new agents and ask them for agents. And none of those really worked out either. The same woman who recommended me the manager recommended me an agent who I met in person, and he kindly declined working with me. So
To your face.
No, he, to his credit, he did not. He met me and we talked, and it was I think a lovely conversation at like a Starbucks. And then I emailed him all my work and he wrote back being like, I really just don't think we have room in the roster right now. There's another person that kind of looks like you or is the same type, and I feel like it'd be a disservice to her if we started working with you too. And so every like 6 months later, I wrote to him again, being like, hey, I just wanted to check in, and a year and a half later, and I think I wrote to him up until like 2, 3 years ago. So every time I, got new credits, I would write to him because he was a great agent, but I'm kind of glad I'm not working with him, to be honest. Anyway, so
Funny how that works out sometimes, though, huh?
exactly. And so I kept trying, and finally I got this, meeting with an agency who is a, they were based out in LA, and they were, I guess, trying to start a New York division from scratch. And so I guess they were more receptive to bringing on new people, you know, because even now they tell me, like, if you don't really have any credits, you know, they're really not going to take a chance on you. And most, a lot of agents are like that. So, you know, at the time I really, you know, I had lots of training on my resume. I had film and TV on my resume. No, not film, TV, low budget films. I had student films. I had lots of theater. I had an off Broadway show all on my resume, but no like major film and TV. And they took a chance on me, and they, you know, I didn't get an audition for 6 months after I started working with them. So 6 months later, I finally got an audition, and the audition was for a big film called Winter's Tale, which was not the Shakespeare Winter's Tale, based on a book, Winter's Tale. And it was being directed and written by the writer for lots of Oscar winning films, including A Beautiful Mind, I'm Legend, I think Cinderella Man. And so the guy who wrote it and is now, this is his directorial debut, I believe, Akiva Goldsman. And Akiva brought over all of these major actors from all the films he's worked on. So he wrote A Beautiful Mind, which was with Russell Crowe and Jennifer Connelly. So he got both of them to be in Winter's Tale. And he did I'm Legend with Will Smith, and I think another movie with him. So he brought on Will Smith to being in the role, to be in the movie. He worked with Colin Farrell. Colin Farrell was the lead in this movie. And so he like kind of brought on all these connections, I think, to be in this film that he was directing for the first time. And I got an audition for a one-line role in this film, right? And through this agent. And I was ecstatic. I mean, this was my first big audition. This was no longer a print or commercial ad where I was number 738. You know, this was like a major motion picture. And so I go into this casting office. I remember Cindy Tolan casting. I was remember the office. I remember looking at the big framed pictures of all the movies that she cast. And I sat down, and there were all these girls who were like very similar to me, like young 20s, pretty, you know, just like wearing a nice dress or something. I don't know what I was wearing. And, you know, they all have, they're clutching their headshots and resumes and their scenes. And I was looking at it. One girl next to me was reading a scene called something like Sexy Girl in Bed with Russell Crowe. Like that was like the title of her scene or her role or something. It was like Sexy Girl in Bed with Colin Farrell, with Russell Crowe. And so I'm like, okay, that's the role she's going in for. That's not the role I'm going in for. I'm going in for Humpstone John's wife, which was this like Native American role in the film, you know, and his wife. So I didn't even get a name. I just was this person's wife. And I go in finally to the audition, super excited. And the casting director starts telling me, she was like, okay, this is your bed. This guy, you know, she pointed to the reader, he's going to be your Russell Crowe. And I just want, and she's setting up a scene thinking I'm going to be this Russell Crowe chick, a girl in bed with Russell Crowe. And I was like, well, listen, I don't mind auditioning for that role, but I'm coming in for Humpstone John's wife. And she was like, oh, totally different. Okay, let's reset this. This is going to be your... This is going to be your bag of muscles that you found on the floor. You're finding some muscles, and then you're going to go over there, and that's going to be a blanket. We're going to put a blanket on the floor, and you're going to just pretend that's a baby you found, and that baby becomes Colin Farrell. And I'm like, great, okay, got it, totally. And I did it. I did exactly what she said. I think I did it twice. And the second time, I strongly remember looking up at the reader who I was playing, you know, Humpstone John, and calling his name, Humpstone John is my only line, Humpstone John. And I remember this moment where he and I looked at each other and I said his name, and I was like, ooh, that, like there was a hit. I felt so like there was something in my chest, and it was like a moment. I was like, oh, there was a connection there. Not with the actor, but just like in general, like I was like something was there. And I left the audition thinking, I think I got that. And I called my mom. I was like, she was like, how was the audition? I was like, I think I got it. Like, I don't know how I know, but I was like, and I didn't hear back for 3 weeks, but I got it. So
3 weeks.
That's the story of my first one. But I really felt like I forgot about the audition, but I knew, I was like, I think I'm getting it. And then my agent called me from LA. He was like, well, do you want to be in a movie with Will Smith? And I was like, I do. And freaked out and probably screamed.
Yeah, but okay, so but you were Huntstone John's wife. Did you
Yes.
just meet Huntstone John? Like your
Yeah.
scene could have been
Yeah.
done with no
Oh.
famous people anywhere
Oh, there's
around.
no famous people on my scene.
Yeah.
I did see Colin Farrell coming out of his trailer though, and I was coming out of maybe hair and makeup or something. And I passed him and I thought to myself, oh my God, I think that's Colin Farrell. So I do a double take thinking like, oh my God, I have to check. Is that Colin Farrell? And he does a double take to me. And I don't know, in my head it was because he thought I was super sexy. But in retrospect, Huntstone John's wife didn't have like the sexiest look. Like she was wearing lots of like layers to her. And they basically put no makeup on me. And when I say basically, I mean they put no makeup on me. And they curled my eyelashes. That was like the only thing. And then they brushed out my hair. So my hair, my very long, thick hair, they brushed out my hair. So my hair was like big. Like they didn't do anything to it. They just brushed it out to the point where like it just like if you see the pictures that like some paparazzi person posted on Google Images, whatever it's called, whatever those paparazzi that logo they put on every picture is, but you'll see it. My hair is just super big and it takes up so much space. And I was like, okay. But in my head, I was like, oh, he's checking me out.
See, I think he was looking at you because you were playing his mom.
Oh, yeah, probably. Oh, he probably saw it and was like, oh, you're in the movie. That's a
He
cool
was
look. Like, you're probably my mom.
like
Yeah.
working his character, you know. I think of him as a deep thinker, you know.
Yeah.
I know that
Yeah,
you
by the way.
wouldn't normally think so, but every movie that I've seen him in that's a little off, I'm like, oh yeah, this guy thinks deeply. That's why he's like,
Yeah.
yes, I'll be in this movie that's definitely all about
Exactly.
thinking. You're like, what is happening right now? I have
Yeah,
trudged
I
through
agree
some
with
rough
you.
films where my husband's like, I'm not watching this. And I was like, well, then leave because I'm getting through this
Oh.
one. Like The Lobster. Ooh.
Oh
Ooh.
my God. You know, and that actually happened to my boyfriend and I where I saw The Lobster and he left like with 40 minutes to spare and I was like, I know this is weird, but I need to see the rest of this.
Oh yeah.
And
Oh yeah.
I definitively can say I didn't love it, but did I see the whole thing? Yeah, I did.
Yeah. It's not about liking it or disliking it. You and I here, this is why we're this similar, and I'll tell you what. It's not about liking or disliking it. It's about appreciating the art. This person made this
Exactly.
movie, and the effort and the detail was so intense. You had to see what they were going to
Oh,
do with it. You had to
exactly.
know. You know what I mean? Like, I've watched
Yeah.
plenty of movies where I'm like, oh man, this is just a weird allegory, but I'm gonna see what he wants to say. Like,
Exactly.
what was it? I feel like there was a movie called like Dogtown or something, which is like this weird, like filmed play, and it's
Oh.
about just sad people. Like, everyone in it's sad. There's no happiness from beginning to end. And I was just, my husband was like, why? This is terrible. And like left. He was like, what? Everyone's so sad. And I was like, yes, but why? Like, and I just was into it. Like, I needed to know, you know? Like, oh man. So, you know, I love the fact that he does those weird movies. And that's why I think when he was looking at you, he was like, let me take this character into my soul because this is my mother. So that's fun. That I love the idea that you got to be in a movie. And my favorite part about acting in film and TV is getting makeup, but you didn't get the makeup.
Yeah.
Oh, dang. So tell me about how it felt after that. That was your first one, you know, but you've done a bunch of
Yeah.
stuff. So like, how did you do like make a good connection with these managers out in LA? Was it like easy to navigate with them being so far away? Like,
You know, it went up and down because, you know, they were creating this agency in New York, but the owners and the people really in charge of everything were in LA, and the ones that I connected to were in LA. So, obviously they would send me on things that were the casting out of LA that were also considering New York actors. So that really was nice. But also, like, there was this up and down thing where I was like, on one hand, you know, they went through many people who would lead the New York team. They had lots of people who were like the head of the New York department. And so, you know, people would come and go, but the problem would be, and it kept coming up, and I kept telling them this, they were getting people who were not, I felt, well connected in the industry. There was one person who had been a manager, so she had some connections. But like as an agent or manager, you need connections, I think, with, you know, not I think, you need connections with casting directors. You need people that casting directors are like, oh my God, her, him, I love them. Like, and I got a little bit of that with one of the people that they worked with. But for the most part, they weren't people who are well known in the industry. So even my agency wasn't well known in New York for a long time. And so, and even till today, I don't think it's super well known. I think it's more known in LA. Not the current agency. The current agency I'm with is very, is more well known for sure. But the one I'd been with was not. And so, you know, it was just this difficulty because I just didn't feel like I was getting a lot of auditions with them. You know, I was getting more auditions with other people I was with, my new manager at the time. And, you know, I just was frustrated. I would keep saying to them, you know, what's going on? And they'll say, you know, they would print out my submission or report and they'd be like, I'm submitting you to all of these TV shows. You're just not getting these auditions. And they'd always tell me the same thing, which is maybe you need to update your headshots. I'm like, but I just updated my headshots. She's like, yeah, but we still need this look. And we still need a look where you look like a casual college student with a ponytail. So I'd be like, oh, so do you know how much like money I put into these headshots? Some of these headshots I spend $800 on. So I was like, this is, you know, the thing I would always get back. And then I remember saying to my agent one day, you see, I totally believe you that you are submitting me to all of these auditions. However, I'm not getting any of them. And you keep saying it's because of my headshots, but my manager is getting me auditions pretty frequently, actually. And they were like, oh, well, maybe your manager needs to be connected to us so that we could all. I'm like, no. I'm not signed with you guys. I'm not required to give you commission for every time my manager potentially gets me something. And she's, you know, so there's like a twofold on that. With one hand, you know, it's nice to have a team that can work together because you don't want to have one person submit you for something that, you know, and another person submit you for the same thing, and then you're just going to have to choose who you go on the audition with, right? Or you decide to go and give them both a commission. But it was just this complicated thing where I was basically telling my agency, listen, you don't have the connections to get me these auditions because my manager's getting them for me, you're not. So I, you know, that says more about how well connected they are if they're able to get me these auditions and not as well connected, that you're not as well connected for not being able to. And that was really frustrating because on one hand, I didn't want to leave them. But on the other hand, because I didn't have anything else, but on the other hand, I really could see that I was having a problem, that like all my auditions were really coming from my manager and very few were coming from my agent. That was really frustrating for a long time.
Did you know when you went into the manager agent relationship that was separate? Did you know that that was a smart idea when you did it, or did it just end up being something that worked in your favor?
I think going into it, I knew that it would be strategic because, you know, people always ask me, what's the difference between an agent or manager? There's a lot of differences based on where you are in your career. If you're Halle Berry and you've been working with the same manager forever, that manager's going to be doing something different for your client than an agent would. At this level, you know, with actors that are still trying to get, you know, credits in film and TV and might not be going for like leads and stuff, right? So, actors at this level, their agents and managers often effectively do the same thing. And that might be a controversial topic. People can debate that, me on that. But I really feel like they're both submitting you for roles. They're both effectively doing the same thing. And so, you know, sometimes managers have a bit more of a hands-on approach. They take on more of a commission if they book you something, but like maybe they'll work with you on your pictures and be more involved with getting you the right pictures or more involved with making sure your resume is great. But for the most part, they effectively do the same thing. And so what I felt was I'd rather have more people submit me for the same role. Now, other people might not agree with that. They'll be like, casting directors don't want to see three people submitting the same person for the same role, right? They don't want to see your picture three times. My thought was, if one person has a better, it's all about connections, right? So if you're with an agent and the agent has a really, I'm going to name mere casting directors because that's really all I know. But if my agent knows Kim Misha from Bowling Misha Casting, which casts like Blue Bloods, right? Which is something I've booked. But like if they know Kim really, really well and they know someone from Jonathan Strauss Casting really, really well, but they're not really close with Kim Graham at Judy Henderson Casting, then I need someone else who is good friends with Kim because I can also be in for Kim, and Kim is only going to choose 20 to 30 people maybe for an appointment for a role, depending on how many people she decides to call in for a role. And she might see the submission from this other agent, just be like, I don't know them as well, but I know this other person. And so if they're going to recommend Michelle, I'm going to bring Michelle. So
Yeah.
you need a lot of that. You need as many people, in my opinion, who are good. You can't just have everybody, but good people being able to submit you for roles, because everyone has just different connections in the industry.
Yeah, no, that's very smart. Plus, you've got to protect your own interests.
Yes.
You've got to be the person who, I don't know, I feel like you have to advocate for yourself or else no one is going to.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
True.
so the more people trying to help you out, the better.
That's
Absolutely.
how I felt. That's how I felt.
Now, I feel like, you have great confidence and you seem to be have like a strong pull to get the work done and to be involved in this industry. Like, how would you give advice to people who maybe don't have the drive that you do? I mean, we've talked a lot about this idea that like, you have to do stuff for yourself and like you have to be researching and like investigating and learning, taking classes, becoming better, improving everything, but what about those people who are just kind of like, I don't know how to do that, or I'm nervous, I'm not good enough. Like, what kind of advice do you have for people to grab onto it as tightly and go for the journey the way you have?
A really good question. It's hard to answer. I teach a lot of communication skills. Okay, so the first way I would say is this. I took a class maybe a year and something ago. Wow, time flies. It was on Coursera. Do you know what Coursera is? It's like a free courses online from different schools. And so I literally free, so it's great. You can't beat the price. And this particular class was out of Yale. I found it on like a Forbes or Business Insider article that said that like this class is the number one class at Yale. And I was like, okay, I have to check it out. It's called The Science of Well-Being. And it's all about just the science and statistics and research behind in a very easy to digest way. I mean, like the classes were like once a week, you watch a couple of videos and you do what's called an adjustment. I think that's what it's called. And the adjustment could be meditate every day and just see if you like it. So it was very like, not extensive, but and it was all about like how to be happy. Like what are the misconceptions of like what it is to be happy and why, and what does the science say? And then what are ways to actually be happy and why, because the science says it. So one of the things was you want to practice doing your signature strengths. And there's actually a test on it. If you look this up, it's like, signature strengths test, and you learn what your strengths are essentially. And the logic behind all this is that there's this misconception you should be working on your weaknesses all the time. And if you're not good at something, you should be working on that more. The problem is that you're not good at it. So you're not going to really feel great about yourself all the time, because your confidence goes down when you play. Like I play tennis, and I don't play very well. I don't play a lot. But when I do, I used to get so mad at myself. I've been playing tennis since I was a kid. How come I'm not doing more? How come I'm not better? Like, how can I not be as more consistent with the amount of lessons I've had over time? My family's very big in tennis. And my uncle's a tennis coach for university, so I've had a lot of tennis camps through him. But anyway, I was not very good at it, and I was very mad at myself. And it only came to this point where, like, this realization where, like, I don't have to be good at tennis. Like, I can go and play, and no one can see me, but I like playing. Like, I've got to an age where I was like, I like this. The point being is that, you find your signature strengths, you find the things you're really good at. And it doesn't mean you can't do things that you're not good at, but it means try to fill up your day with more things you are good at, because your confidence will increase. And somehow through your signature strengths, I think you will be able to find ways into whatever path that it is that you want. So, so that's one answer I'd give, because I really do believe that, find other things in related that you're good at, and you'd be surprised at how much it comes back to what your original goal was sometimes, right? Like the amount of connections you can get, and I have so many stories like this, but like the mentors that are on my episode 2, There are these two actresses. Their names are Shalini and Jackie, but they call themselves Shawls and Jack because they think it's easier, Shaw and Jack. And so they're friends of mine. They both are actors, right? They're both sort of around the same age as me, maybe a little older, I think. And they wanted to be actresses, and they also wanted to do like a project together. So they did a couple theater stuff. They did a couple maybe short films, I think. And finally, they're like, you know, we should do a podcast, but what should it be about? And they both loved Hallmark movies. So they're like, let's just put a podcast together where we make Hallmark movies. This was like two and a half years ago. And they made this podcast. They did it for a year, right? So they really did. It's not like they had a huge following, they said. It wasn't like their following was like massive, but they came up with something good. And then one of them reached out to the CEO of Hallmark, right? The other girl, by the way, was very, very open on the podcast where she was like, this was not my strength. This is Shaw's strength. My strength is just kind of showing up and doing the thing, you know, or coming up with games. The other one's like, I'm the producer side of it too. Like they're both the hosts of the show, but the other one was like, I'm, you know, and I remember Jack said to Shaw at some point, she was like, I was crying in like a bodega. That was like a very, you know, wonderful story that stuck out, but she was like, I was crying to bodega at Shaw being like, I want to do this, but I don't think that I can. This is so not my strength. And the other, like, I can't edit a podcast. That's not something I'm good at. And Shaw was like, oh, I'm good at that stuff. I'll figure that out. I'm good at that stuff. I will do it. I think it's going to be fun to do it with you. And I think that our dynamic and our rapport will shine. And so if you just show up and do the episode, I will take care of the other stuff. So the same girl has the strength to then a year later, reach out to the CEO of Hallmark and say, hey, I've heard you guys are going to start a podcast soon, or you guys started one. We'd love to collaborate with you guys. This is kind of our shtick. This is the kind of segments we do. This is the kind of work we do. And wrote this like long email about all these possible ways to collaborate. And the CEO never responded for 5 weeks. So it was a long 5 weeks. And then 5 weeks later, he was like, okay, yeah, why don't you come for a meeting? It was like a one line response. And they came for a meeting, and they are now the official Hallmark podcast.
Nice.
So, you know, I would say that's what I would say to this. I would be like, listen, you know, they were very open about what their strengths were. Oh, here's even the cooler part. So obviously they both love being a podcast host. They love their Hallmark podcast, the Bubbly Sesh, for those of you who are interested. And they, like a few months later, I mean, and they've done some really cool stuff. So now they have this resource behind the sponsor, right? So they're able to do like major interviews with the actors and the writers and the directors behind these Hallmark films. They run big Hallmark panels for them. Like now that's all virtual, but at the time they were flown to different places in LA to do these big events for Hallmark. They've gotten like hookups with different brand deals that Hallmark has with people that they've tried out, like with like getting their hair blown out for free, because, whatever, all this stuff. And I, you know, a few months later, they actually had roles written for them on a Hallmark movie. Small roles, but still like very, very, very much their personality. They didn't audition for it. The roles were written for them, and they were flown to Ohio, and they shot these, they shot these roles, but then also they got to like do a podcast episode with some of the people from set. And so they got to like film all that and record all that and talk about all that for their social media and for their podcast. And they got these roles that they got to act in, and their trailers and the whole thing. So, you know, I just feel like, I guess the answer to your question, you know, I could give you advice on how to be extroverted and determined and all that stuff. But I think people get more confidence from doing things that they really enjoy and do well in. And doing more of that, I think, will help you get to where you want to go. So I think we just maybe focus sometimes on what we're not good at and trying to get better at it. And there's a point to that, I think. But I think there's also a point to making sure you develop the things you're good at, because that'll give you the confidence to like go to any room, because you're like, I don't know much about like doing, you know, being super determined and introducing myself and being extroverted to this director, but I'm really good at editing. One of the last mentors I've had for episode 7 is named Arun Narayanan, and he's a really good writer, right? He went to USC for his master's for production and stuff, and he's a really good writer, and he's written a, you know, film before that's, you know, had some, you know, great actors in it, and he writes this really funny web series called Arun Considers, also plugging him, you know, in that way. But he also is a good editor. So his side jobs, and I don't even like to say side jobs because they've been side careers, are you know, he spent a long time freelancing doing editing work and then started working as an editor for Disney. And now he works at Netflix. So he is a bit, you know, big editorial analyst at Netflix and does a lot of like this cutting edge metadata work. But also he has an agent in writing and he writes. So I just, yeah, I guess I feel like keep doing what it is you're good at and it'll help. It'll get to where you want to go.
Yeah, I like that. I also like the idea of not trying to judge it. You know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
There's a lot of judgment when you're like, I wish I was better at this thing. But it's like, okay,
yeah.
Great. That's awesome. Put that in the work on it pile. But like, what are you awesome at?
Yeah, exactly.
Really important to know. In a large sense too, like not even just in a, like in the way that it is good for you to like become a better speaker if you know you're already good at speaking, right? Of course. But
right.
If you can see how you could potentially even use that skill in other ways, like it's like, yeah I could be hosts of events and do this for jobs. So okay, also yes, but you're also not afraid to talk to people in large groups. Are there other things you'd like to help? Because this skill could be used for, you know, local politics. You could use it for, you know, being the loudest person on a picket line. I am the loudest
right.
person always, right? So whenever they're like, we need a loud person, they come to me. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
like we need
yeah.
someone to start this chant. I'm like, got it. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like we have skills and they're, you sometimes they're not, you're not necessarily going to use them for what you think you're going to use them for.
Right.
But
exactly.
Be open to the possibilities of where it could possibly take you. Because I love this idea that this person was like, yeah, I'm down to edit this podcast. And then that like idea spinning in that head was like, also let's give this guy a call and say, hey, let's work together. Like
exactly.
The openness to the collaboration is amazing. And that's that person's skill, right? So
exactly.
great. So fun. Man, you've just learned so much. I love hearing, like, when you bring up your guests and these people that you've interacted with, you've, like, so soaked up the, like, wisdom mm-hmm. they've given you. And I think that that is so amazing. And, like, you're just really using it well, you know, not only
Aww.
Just putting it out in the world for other people, but, like, it's enriching you and, like, making you
Definitely.
A, like, richer, better human being. Right.
I feel that way. I appreciate that. I'm glad it comes out that way because I really do feel like I learned so much from these people.
For sure. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Aww.
I really am so glad to have taken the time to chat with you. And I feel such a kindred spirit with you.
Aww.
And I just feel like this has been a great talk. So thank you for doing it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it too. And this has been great.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.